Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake, we are starting the show with some, like, follow-on news.
Yeah,
follow-on
news. It's St. Patrick's Day right now, we should mention.
Today is St. Patrick's Day, recording. Yes. I'm excited to be here. I'm podcasting.
Yeah.
I don't know why my eyes action seems to involve going before I start talking.
It's more of a lisping to it.
This is a green podcast.
It's, yeah.
All right.
It's slightly like, cartoon Irish, but anyway, you're closer to the mark than I would be.
Yeah, and frankly, doing a better accent is better than...
And I'm just realizing, as we start this, we really should have had beer, but we don't. Oh, well.
We don't. We'll get by. That's fine, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, sadly, but St. Patrick's Day. So, happy St. Patrick's Day to you all out there.
Yeah.
Like I say, another part of the empire that's going to get sliced off shortly.
Yeah, well, they're trying to figure that stuff out. It's a bit of a mess, right?
Yes.
Like, Northern Ireland wants to stay as a part of the EU effectively somehow. Well, not really, yeah, literally, but they want to have an open border to regular Ireland, which you really shouldn't be able to do, and I don't know.
So who knows?
Confusing.
Yeah. So anyway.
But you're about to say, you know, we recently spoke about DNA.
Yes.
And an article came out. Like, as usual, we are very... I don't know if we just have like a little extra sensory perception of trends in the world. Like, you know, a lot of times we talk about something and it's not even a response, it's just something that comes up, and then like a week or two later something else comes up, you're like, well, that fits perfectly. It's kind of like when you buy a car and then you see all the same cars around.
No, I just think we're ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I know. If you're going to give us credit,
I'm reassuring our listeners. There's a reason that you should be listening, that you listen to this show,
right?
And there's a reason you tell your friends to listen to this show. One of the things I'd like to think that you say is those two guys are ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we're the tip of the spear or something.
Tip of the spear, yeah.
So anyway, there was a story out about an astronaut, last name's Kelly. Do you have his first name?
Kelly.
Scott Kelly was one of these, you know, nowadays astronauts don't go to the moon or anything. They go up in the orbit for like a year or two or something like that. And I think he was up in the space station for like 2 years. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, he happens to be a twin. So he's got a matching brother down here, identical twin, we should point out. And, you know, we talked about different types of twins.
Oh, no, they're both astronauts.
Oh, really? That's weird.
One is Scott. One is Scott Kelly, and the other one is Mark Kelly.
Well, only one was in space for 2 years.
Yeah, but they're both astronauts. Which sort of makes it... Can I just stop for a moment and go, it sort of makes sense, isn't it? I mean, there's all that hoo-ha about finding people with the right stuff. But when you identify one with the right stuff,
the other one,
it's a given that the twin should be pretty close.
Nature or nurture, though. You know, did they get the right stuff from their training, or did they get the right stuff from their genetics?
Yeah, that's a good point. Speaking unless the other one, you know, it's not like this is an identical twin where one is a go-getter and the other one just sits around on the couch eating Doritos. Yeah. I mean...
So a week and change ago, an article or a number of articles came up, and I guess there was a press release basically talking about some study that they've been doing on the genetics of folks who come back from space. And the way it got reported out, I think including in the press release, was effectively that his genetics had changed from being in space, that he no longer matched.
That's right.
And that there was some like reversion back to it. Is the article you have, is that the original or is
No, this
the
is
follow-up?
The one, this is the follow-up. And again, if you're not sure what we're talking about here, I'm going to shout out two movies. One is The Astronaut's Wife. I think that's Charlize Theron and Johnny Depp, and he comes back and he's different. Changed. And then the other one is, of course, Species 2, which is the lesser sequel to the original Species with Michael Madsen and...
Well, what's the plot of Species 2?
I don't know.
Species 1 is the aliens coming.
Yeah, I don't know. The astronaut comes back and he's different, and then... He's killing people, and then he mates with the girl from Species... Because that's what aliens do. They mate.
Natasha Henstridge.
And then, I don't know, then Michael Madsen shows up and is killing people. It is not as good.
Now, the first one is a little bit weird because it comes from an era of movies. When you watch it, it doesn't seem very real. It's not very lived in. Like, it just seems sort of like a TV movie-ish a little bit.
But it's got a good cast.
But it's got a great cast, and it is highly rewatchable. And I think it has something to do with, you know, these movies that have... beats to them, like they have five or six here to there. We get to with that, they're easy. You jump in and you go, oh, we're at that part, and you know, you take it on this arc, and it's almost like you're watching a series of TV episodes.
Well, I'm gonna do one more thing. I don't want to get too hung up on the movie Species, but It's also very watchable in that it sort of crosses genres a little bit. It's not a straight up sci-fi monster flick a la Alien. Yeah. It's also got this sort of notion of, you know, sort of the dude is a bounty hunter and special ops group, and they're trying, you know, ragtag team of
people with like these different expertise
who are trying to track down the alien. And so, again, if
you see it on cable and you haven't seen it, the original one for sure, Species, it's worth a watch.
Yeah, Species 2 is terrible. Yeah. And apparently there's a Species 3 where no one in classic third movie sequel fashion, absolutely no one from Species 1 or Species 2 is in it. And even the Species is like a knockoff of Natasha Hendricks without being Natasha Hendricks, who, of course, before she was in Species, I mean, she was just a model.
Yeah.
Was
she one of these ones who like didn't speak English or something like that?
No, she's American.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I get them all mixed up.
Yeah.
Anyways, we definitely wandered off there.
Sorry.
So the DNA, like those were the two movies Zeph is recommending if you want to get, you know, your science from movies.
Yeah, which I do. Yeah.
So the story came out that, oh, their DNA changed, and he was even quoted like, oh, golly, I guess he's not, you know, now I won't be like my twin brother cracking some jokes about being better or something. And they had some percentage, like 7% of his DNA had changed. Well, we had already planned. I think we emailed that article to each other.
Yes.
You know, and said, okay, we'll talk about this. But then in the ensuing time period, good that we didn't come in the middle of it, a bunch of articles followed up and were like, that is not true.
Well, that's not true because, again, I'm going to quote straight from one of the follow-up articles. We've just quoted out there that Scott Kelly came back and 7% of his DNA, it was reported that 7% of his DNA had changed. But again, according to this article from Gizmodo, which is in the Deadspin family of networks, except if 7% of Scott Kelly's DNA actually changed, he would be a completely different species. Humans and chimps, for example,
I mean,
share 96% of the same DNA, a 4% difference. And I actually think like humans and dolphins are like 92% alike.
Yeah, they do look a little different from each other for identical twins, and you know, you kind of wondered about it. But as it turns out,
to be fair though, because one of them's been in space and you don't eat properly, and they all come back and their hair's a bit funny, and there's
no gravity,
and they've got shorter and everything. I mean, that's all part of it. I mean, I'm not being flip about the whole going to space and coming back different, but
so a number of articles, including there's one that does a heavy science on it. I think it's in Ars Technica, does a whole thing like explaining it all, and I tried to read it. It's very hard to figure out what it's really saying. But at the end of the day, the big thing they're talking about is the expression of your genes. You know, your genes are it's like the roadmap.
Yes.
But then your genetics are replicating, and it's not perfect all the time. There's little variations, and they're like little extra chemicals attached to the ends, and like it creates certain chemicals in your body, and it, you know, does all these things. And apparently that's where the variance really was. And it's, you know, it's not really on any of the fundamental genetic code. It's really just about how it plays out, which they basically, somebody said, you know, it's what you'd expect from any body under stress. Might be the same as somebody who was a scuba diver or a mountain climber or something like that would have an elevated level of unusual recurrences just because your body's not totally comfortable.
Basically, and again, the Gizmodo article actually gave quite a good I'm now trying to think of the correct term when you describe something in other terms as an example. I'm getting lost on my grammar right there. But anyway, what they said was the trip to space could have switched some of the tape around, meaning the DNA tape, but ultimately the words are exactly the same.
Oh, it's a metaphor.
A metaphor. There you go. That's what I was looking for. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, at the end of the day, not terribly interesting. There's an article in, I think, The Atlantic, not to be confused with The Atlantic Voice, but the magazine that occasionally we have to check on although The Atlantic.
No, it's the Canadians.
Yeah, it's the Canadian podcast.
Yeah. There's a Canadian podcast. And again, and I'm just going to just warn them, because we do have a regular small group of people in Canada that listen.
Yeah.
And I don't know anyone in Canada, so they're not friends of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I do suspect that it is people from that show who check in every week to make sure that everyone is creatively in their own lane. I believe so, yes.
Well, we predate them.
So at the end of the day, the Canadian broadcasting, come on down. We'll take you on.
Annoyingly, they do it professionally, however, which means that they have much nicer graphics and things on their blog or whatever.
And that's great. But at the end of the day,
we're first.
This block belongs to us, Canadian Atlantic Voice.
I'm not even sure
Voice.
Why they call theirs Atlantic Voice either, because ours is, you know, we're transatlantic speakers. But well, I mean, I don't really know what theirs is other than the
fact I think it differentiates itself from that other big Canadian podcast, the Mountie Voice. And so they have to have an Atlantic voice. So
it's the voice, but it's like it doesn't have a the or something like that.
It's just a yeah. But anyway,
once again, the Atlantic though magazine had an article that was really almost as much about how did this happen in terms of the information cycle, because they're talking about how the first set of articles became swept up in that, you know, fake news, digital information kind of debate a little bit. And I think I didn't read the whole way through, but I think they're talking about like, okay, how does this happen? And the truth is, I mean, I'll tell you how it happens. Newspapers and like real news reporters are really notoriously bad at reporting science. Whenever you see something in the paper that says, oh, a new study says this, cancer's risks is elevated from that, people get colds from dogs, you know, things like that. If you ever, like, if you know anybody who knows science, you immediately have them dive in and they'll go, this is not at all what the study's saying. The big problem is, like, the study says certain things are more likely than not, like, certain percentage of possibility, you know, there's variability and the like. And the papers will just report them as they are. Oh, study found that this is a fact. And studies never really find that that's a fact. The studies find that, hey, we think this is what's going on. There's a theory here and that kind of thing.
I'm going to give you, for those of you out there, I'm going to give you sort of like a layered system of how you should trust science articles. You've got, like, you've just spoken about Ars Technica.
Yeah.
That's a very, I mean, that's a, if you're into science, like Ars Science Advisor Report, that's where you go.
Oh, the Senior Science Advisor of the Pod goes to websites that have the actual studies linked, you know, and so that's
so the if you want above. Your science, you go there first. If you're out there listening and you're vaguely interested, I'm going to say this now as a compliment to my partner. Listen to what my partner says, because he knows more than some Joe journalist.
Yeah.
I fall below that because I don't know what I'm talking about. But to be fair, I'm still above this random journalist who's basically gone to the internet, read the article, retyped it, and turned it into his copy editor. Yeah. So right there, I'm above, as questionable as my science knowledge is, I'm above like the third estate, the fourth estate. I'm below you, and then obviously below proper science.
And people. All of them are above the people who currently run science departments of the government.
So. Yes, yeah.
You know, the
senior although science, if you're one of our Canadian listeners, I don't want to speak for your media up there, could be entirely different.
The senior scientist of the pod is actually going to be in town shortly for a full week for a science conference.
Oh, there you go.
And maybe we'll have to have a guest appearance or something.
We can do that, yeah. So anyway, are we done with the DNA non-story?
Yes, right. But speaking of scientists,
the granddaddy of them all passed away.
Well, I don't know if he's a granddaddy of all, like Einstein or, you know, people.
Oh, okay, that's a good point.
The living uncle of the most senior. Well, I don't know if he's the most senior, but.
No, I'm going to say this. Dr. Stephen Hawking passed away.
Right.
I think it's fair to say that to our generation, to the 20th century, he's the granddaddy of them all.
Sure.
Right? So better, you're right. I mean,
Carl Sagan.
That's what I'm saying. You've got Carl's TV people.
He's a scientist at some level. But
Neil deGrasse Tyson. These guys are very smart. But Japanese dude who does the shows. What's his name? Those guys are very smart, but they're not Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, I mean, Hawking was dealing at, you know, the super high genius level. Yeah. I mean, he's not alone up there. And part of his appeal was he was able to translate things to a more commonplace layman's kind of language. He wrote the book A Brief History of Time,
was that his book? That's his, yeah.
And that was like a bestseller, although I was reading one of the obituaries was saying it may be the case that more people had that on their shelves than actually read it, because it was pretty dense for a layman, but it was at least approaching a layman thing. And you know, we start to get into things, whereas Einstein, like, you know, your whole thing about the what is it,
the if you're sitting on a train in the station and the other train moves, it can seem like you're moving. That's Einstein's theory of relativity.
Hereby evidencing what, like, Zev just told us about our science levels. But even Einstein stuff, like, there was some level where, like, okay, I kind of, like, once we moved into the Noor unifying theory, like, he built on that stuff. And, you know, suddenly black holes are no longer black holes in the sense that, like, things can escape them and they emanate. Now, just, I don't know, you know, it got very confusing very quickly. So it's hard for me to say I could follow anything he invented. But, you know, we're dealing with higher level math and physics and the like.
But what was most striking to me was the fact that when he passed away, I did feel, and I made this comment to you before in the green room, I did feel like there wasn't enough of a hoo-ha that he died. And I've just made the statement that I believe that to our generation in the 20th/21st century, he is the granddaddy of science. I know this much. His movie won Academy Awards. I can't even name any movies that Hollywood have done about Albert Einstein.
The movie, of course, being...
I think there's one with Tim Robbins, where Tim Robbins plays Albert Einstein, and then it's all a bit some like goofy
Young
romance.
Einstein, was that movie?
No, I'm not even counting that with Yahoo Serious. That just rolled off my tongue. But yeah, he passed away, and I was surprised that there didn't seem to be more of it. I noticed, interestingly, that President Trump didn't say anything, because by his standard, if Dr. Stephen Hawking dies, then President Trump takes on the mantle of the most intelligent man in the world, because he's always claiming that he's smarter than everyone else. Well, so.
Plus, Hawking's disabled, so you know the president might have had a hard time not making a joke about that.
That's true. Dr. Stephen Hawking disabled, and it's funny.
That's what I don't want
to end up in some like politically incorrect hole here. For some reason, I was trying to think of other world figures who also had, you know, like obviously, you know, historically Beethoven was deaf. Mm-hmm. So that's amazing that he did what he did. And he was deaf. Now, again, I'm not saying that somehow being disabled, obviously Dr. Stephen Hawking's mind was, you know, beyond capacity. But it's interesting. He was also quite unique in that fashion as well.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone else in any field, philanthropy or anything, who's also, you know, fighting.
Well, we'd have a decent number of blind people, you know, who are musicians. And
yeah, but that's entertainment, though, isn't it?
They've got, who's the woman who's the, yeah, I was going to say, outside of entertainment in the regular world. It's got to
be Stephen Hawking, I mean, you know.
So he had whatever the heck ALS stands for.
Yeah, Stephen Hawking and obviously Dr. X, who's in a wheelchair from the X-Men. Yeah. Professor Xavier.
Is that what X-Men? What Professor
Xavier? Yeah, Professor
had?
Xavier. He's in a wheelchair as well.
Oh, yeah, but I don't know why.
Well, I don't know. It's because he's a mutant. I don't think Stephen Hawking was a mutant, but there you go. Yeah. X-Men is the only one of those like sort of movies that I do. I don't do any of the others. So I do speak with some vague.
Really? You do X-Men, but not the other like Marvel movies?
No, I don't do any of them. Hmm. I only do X-Men. Because it's got like Wolverine and, you know, Patrick Stewart, and then the young guys playing them. Yeah. I don't know.
McAvoy.
I've got a soft spot for, McAvoy and Fassbender. Mm-hmm. And then, what's his name? Oh, I've had a mind break now. The great Shakespearean actor who plays with, he was in Lord of the Rings as well.
Yeah,
I just feel like X-Men is,
All right. So, once again, we wander off into movies.
Sorry.
But, he was affected with this and is starting his mid-20s. And the movie you alluded to there was a movie about his life, right? What is it called?
Theory of Everything?
Yeah. And I think that's
Confused now with the book that you just said.
No, the
is this Theory Beyond the Stars or something
that? A Brief History of Time is the book.
Okay, so it's Theory of Everything.
I think it is a theory.
Yeah, it's Eddie Redmayne. Won an Oscar for playing him.
Did he?
And then the girl, I've forgotten her name. Now I can see her face. Anyway, let's move on.
The thing that's not, I think that is based on a book by his wife. And so.
Yeah, but that's more about him rather than.
Right, he had an interesting personal life in that while he was in graduate schools, when the diagnosis of this first turns up, he then marries this woman. They had two or three kids before he got really severely affected.
Yeah.
At least according to the Wikipedia, like they definitely, you know, she had to do a lot of caretaking for him. And the Wikipedia seems to suggest that at some point she struck up a relationship with somebody else with permission.
Okay.
But then says they got into a stress, you know, that it became too stressful taking care of him. She was religious, which I don't understand how that fits in with having a relationship with somebody else. But whole nother point is why I say, you know, Wikipedia maybe not totally authoritative. And so they end up getting divorced. He ends up getting married to like somebody who was his nurse at the time. They get divorced. And then he really kind of restrikes a relationship up with the wife, the first wife, and his family. And I guess from that point on, it's probably a very, I don't want to say business-like, but it's like a family, you know, just not, you know, maybe not with its romance or whatever it was. But I think that's when she writes, like she had written a book while they were separated that was not, where they were divorced, and they stayed divorced, of course.
Okay.
But then she updated the book when they were back together, and it kind of made a more full picture. And I think that's the version of the book that got turned into the movie.
All right.
half of those facts may be wrong. 7% of that DNA may be
mutated. I'm still trying to, when you said that, like, you know, the marriage became very businesslike, and I can't decide if constantly talking about science is, like, erotic in any which way.
I don't know. It'd be one thing if you understood it, but like if he's
yeah, that's probably what it is. Yeah,
understand. It's not very beneficial. So anyway, he passed. I agree that like it was definitely low played. I imagine we'll probably see maybe the problem is how to translate what he did, right?
Yeah, I know. But
and I also think, you know, him being disabled, there's not a lot of.
But that's what I'm saying, though.
There's not a lot of, like, video and stuff to show of him, although he, you know, there was a whole thing about, like, the systems he
got. Which company used him in their commercials? Was it Apple or Microsoft or what, or HP or someone? He featured prominently in a campaign for one of these guys. And so this is my point about...
So he had like a whole synthesizer voice that they originally set up that he could work off the keyboard, right. Then he couldn't do it with his hand. And so he's like his eyebrows twitching, different facial things that he could control the things. And at one point he could only get like a word per minute or something that he could put into this, but he would play that. And apparently the voice out of the synthesizer was discontinued, but he arranged to still have it because, of course, that became his voice.
Right? Yeah.
Like, you know, you can't have, like, suddenly you're hearing him. And you're, wait a minute, that doesn't sound like him before because the computer had changed. There had been an update in software or something.
Like I said, I just felt, especially like millennials and people out there, they're all going to know who he is. And I was just surprised there didn't seem to be more, again, because maybe the science reporter was busy getting the DNA story wrong, and he then wasn't trusted to do the obituary for Stephen Hawking. I just felt like he sort of, Stephen Hawking passed, and I just expected that it'd be more of a hoo-ha about it.
Yeah, more of a hoo-ha. I would like a good hoo-ha when I...
Right, anyway, so Stephen Hawking wrote books, which brings us to our next story.
That's right, the Amazon story.
The Amazon store, and I went, and Amazon are opening some bookstores. They're opening a couple in this area where the show comes from, so well, I actually...
One's open, right, Georgetown, and they're supposed to put another one in Bethesda.
The one in Georgetown opened only days ago, and I went down 2 days after opening to do an on-site report.
I think it was like their 15th or something like that.
Really?
Yeah. They started in Seattle in like 2015 or something like that, and they've been putting a few. I think they did D.C. and Austin, Texas around the same time, but another one. Bethesda's coming in. Here's, I guess, how that visit went.
Yeah, I took the mic, and I went out on outside broadcast.
Yeah.
So I'm in the new Amazon bookstore, trying to keep my voice down because it's a bookstore, and I'm actually standing in front of the very sizable magazine rack, which is exactly what people go to bookstore for. It's actually to just browse, and the magazine rack, nice and substantial, nice and big, with all the latest magazines. And then that's right next to the book, the cooking section, and then the arts and crafts section. So everything laid out like a regular bookstore, different sections, different books. One thing that's interesting is that each book has a tag below it on the shelf that has a quick Amazon customer review. So, for example, I'm looking, I don't know, I'm in the self-improvement section, and there is a book here that's called The Wisdom Journal, and there's a bit of information on the tag that says, filled with intuitive prompts and inspiring quotations, this journey will help you record the journey of your life while reflecting on the things that bring the most wisdom and joy. I think that was an Oprah. It's an Oprah Winfrey book. And then the information also tells me that there's fewer than 10 reviews. Below it is a book called The Misfits Manifesto, and it says 100% of reviewers rated this item 5 stars. So this is very much like your internet browsing experience come to life. Let me see here. Here's another book over here, Positive Parenting, An Essential Guide. There's a little spiel, an Amazon customer review. More than a parenting book, it is a guide to human connection. And then also there it says there's been 93 reviews and it has 4.7 stars. As of October of 2017. So again, this is your internet click brought to life. Here's an interesting tidbit. All the books are on the shelves face out, meaning nothing nothing has been stacked spine out. Everything is stuck, has been placed face out. So you are looking at the front cover of the book. I just noticed that. I was wandering around everywhere. Not a single book has been placed spine out. So you can see the cover of everything.
Can you find anything?
No, I'm just wandering around.
Okay,
thank
wandering
you.
Around. I had another question.
I'm now downstairs. It's two levels in the mystery and thriller section. But also what's interesting of note is the fact that there is a coffee shop in the Amazon bookstore. You can also get yourself a draft beer. I haven't gone up to see what those draft beers are. I know that would be most interesting to my partner. Also looking around here, I'm in the kids section. The one thing that this bookstore doesn't have, which surprises me a little bit, there is no... There's no DVD or CD section. Plenty of Amazon technology out though. In a moment we're going to go back up to the Alexa and thingio machine thing, but you know, there are random stands with all their stuff out there. Echo Dot and Alexa. This one says, call me Alexa. Alexa, show me my flash briefing. Alexa, show me today's weather. Oh, you can see it's just talking back to me. I don't know if you could hear that on my microphone. I'm now having a conversation with you all and a conversation with Alexa. Oh, I stand collected. I just swung by the coffee shop, and in fact, the taps are for that nitro coffee. So no, you actually can't get a beer in the Amazon coffee shop. So I'm in the technology section. They've got lots of Kindle stuff. I don't know enough about it historically to know if Kindle was an Apple thing originally. There's random assistants wandering around like in the Apple store that can swipe and help you out. All their technology is up here. Fire tablets. And then all the headphones and all the stuff that works with Alexa. And also Fire TV, whatever that is. All right, so I'm walking back along M Street in Georgetown. Hopefully you can hear. Hopefully the microphone is picking up sounds of traffic to show that I actually was out and about. I guess my overall review of the Amazon bookstore is it's just like a regular bookstore, except it's an Amazon.
All right, so there I was out there.
It's just like a real bookstore,
It was just like a real bookstore. And then again, I wanted to set this up a little bit. Or do we want to get to the fact that where it is first, or do we want to talk about it?
So it's, like I understand, it's located where the Barnes & Noble was. Like, so in fact, it just slotted in where a bookstore
there
that
used
was
to be,
closing.
But Barnes & Noble used to have a big Georgetown store, and was it a Borders? It was a Barnes & Noble. And it was a classic Barnes & Noble from, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, three or four levels, big, you know, cafe, big DVD, music section. And then Barnes & Noble closed that store. The property was taken over by Nike, who I think have the bulk of the lot. But then Amazon have slotted in, but it is still on the same sort of footprint that the Barnes & Noble was originally on. And I just found that all completely ironic.
Yeah, and I think the one in Bethesda is not moving into the Barnes & Noble space, but it's like 1,000 feet down the road
from
where the Barnes & Noble had just closed.
Yeah.
And so it is interesting they're stepping in. I gather there's some degree of a revival in bookstores a little bit, like the Politics and Prose group, which is like a small chain here in D.C., has been apparently expanding. I think some are trying to mix them in with like cafes and restaurants.
Well, Politics and Prose has always been that way. That was a very large restaurant and good food. And so it has always sort of melded the whole, you can eat, then you can wander around the bookstore. And there's Politics and Prose, there's Busboys and Poets, which I think is the same way. There was one in D.C. called Kramer Books and Afterwards.
I think that one's gone now. But
yeah, but I do think it's interesting that, you know, at the Barnes & Noble, the argument was made that the on-site brick-and-mortar bookstore went under because it couldn't compete with the internet.
Right.
And now the internet is deciding to expand into brick-and-mortar stores. Mm-hmm. There's something all very, you know, pop will eat itself type thing.
Yeah, well, so you have to kind of wonder.
Well, my first question was I couldn't understand, why are Amazon even in this?
Yeah,
what do they need the
point,
aggravation,
you know,
for?
And if you want to say, you know, if they're being nefarious, you know, like it's continuing to want to stomp out the regular bookstores by now just like It's like
that was their plan all the way along.
Well, no, not meaning that's where you're going to win, but like it's like you bring in air power in a war, you soften up the target.
Okay,
but eventually you have to put boots on the ground, okay. Right? And so now you put boots on the ground to like when a person decides they want to go to a bookstore, now they're going to go to this one instead, maybe, you know, at the margins and put more pressure on these folks. I don't know that that's what it is. I mean, I think it's, and you commented on the books being set up the way they are. And I think at some
level... I didn't notice it at first, but I got hung up how each book had the tag, and I'm reading the tag, and it's, ooh, customer reviews. Now, that's you go... I do that when I buy anything from Amazon.com. If I'm comparing candles, yeah. I'm going to look and see which one has but the better
Barnes
rating.
Barnes & Noble's always had, like, at least in their main... You know, they had a bunch of staff picks.
Staff picks, yeah.
Which is a little different. But the... At some level, it may just be an advertisement for Amazon. That, like, if they don't make enough money, you know, selling books to, like, pay the rent and their employees, they may not care because it's just like a big billboard. I mean, I'm pretty sure that the Nike store there may not make enough money to you know, it's not like a big profit center as a store, but it's a continuously available advertisement on how we are here and a part of your life and, you know, just the conversation about it and the fact that you walk past it every day may make you think, oh, I could do the Amazon. That's one version. The other version is that both of these are probably why they're not spying out books. You know, when you – obviously, it's a question of space, right? Like if you do spying out books, you can put a bunch of more books into the same amount of space.
Right.
Instead of flattening there. Well, Amazon has an advantage of great – they know what people buy, and so they can ship things to your house in a day, right? So they can have very just-in-time inventory, what they call is, you know, in the business, is that they don't need to worry about having a box of these books behind the counter because if they sell out, they can have more of them there the next day. You know,
that's the thing, is that like everything is a display item only, almost.
In a way. It's you don't want people to not be able to buy it and turn away, but, you know, it's easy for them to manage. And with those in mind, they're really – you use the word about browsing. They're not really – like you're not going to go to that store because, oh, I want to get X book. If I want to get X – like if you decided you want a particular book, you'll go on the website and get it sent to your house.
Well,
like, but if you're like, I'm kicking around Georgetown and I'm between the stage of coffee and beer. Yeah. Like I need some way to kill this 3 to 4 o'clock span.
What?
So you're going to pop in there and you might walk out the door.
And this was why I made that comment when I first walked in. The first thing I looked for was, to me, this was sort of like a, is this a legit bookstore or not, was there a magazine rack? Because I'm one of those people who goes to the bookstore.
I like the fact that you observed that was a sturdy magazine rack.
Well, I went and I'm thinking, if this is just some outlet for Amazon stuff, then they're probably not going to have much of a magazine rack. But clearly, to your point about people wanting to kill the three o'clock to four o'clock between coffee and beer time, it's when people
walk around Georgetown.
Right. You could walk in there. I mean, and they had lots of magazines. It was almost like I live not far from an existing Barnes & Noble. It was almost as substantial as the variety of that Barnes & Noble. Like there was the international copy of, you know, Esquire magazine as well as the US one. So I'm sitting there, you know, in an odd way, I'm like, ooh, so this, I kept saying to myself, ooh, this is a proper bookstore.
Yeah.
And then when I went downstairs, you know, my next thought is, well, I wonder if they've got a cafe here. Oh, they've got a little cafe there. And
they get you walking around with a cup of coffee for again burning that time, and you might buy. But I bet you, did you buy anything?
I did not. No.
So I bet you, if you wanted to get a book, right, but you don't want to carry it around with you for the rest of the night, you probably just walk up there to the counter and say, "Send it to my house." You know, like through regular Amazon, you know, again, it just becomes, it's a display point. It's a way to browse. It's like a big, big rack.
Well, I did make, you know, when we listened back to the clip there, I did get my Apples and Amazons confused. And it was also because I was very conscious of the fact that they'd gone the Apple route of having a whole load of posts. You know, if you go to your Barnes & Noble and you're looking for something, you can go to the help desk and they will look it up for you. Then when you want to pay, you have to go and line up. Amazon had lots of people wandering around who would help you there.
Oh, and you could just buy?
You could just buy and you could swipe your card with someone standing there in the same way that...
That's pretty innovative. I didn't mention that.
In the same way that that's, to me, and I don't want to go on about Apple, but Apple were the first ones where you'd wander into the store and you just grab it and you go to the nearest dude standing there and you run your card. And,
yeah,
and
I don't know that.
So Amazon, well, because you're not an Apple person. Apple are big on, you know, you don't line up at the register. You just go to the nearest fellow who's helping you and you hand him your box and he swipes your card and emails you your receipt. And it's all very, oh, wow, this is not like shopping. Well, the Amazon store had a till where you could check out.
Yeah, you could have been,
but there were also other people all wandering around. Especially, I noticed
right,
in
right.
the.
If you went up there and you said, hey, listen, I want this book, but I don't really feel like walking around. And they're like, well, let me punch up your Amazon ID because everybody's got one, right. And we'll have it sent over right to you and you show up on your doorstep tomorrow
morning. And they did have a lot of people hanging around in like the Alexa, Kindle, Apple, Amazon Fire TV section.
Yeah.
Ready to answer questions about the headphones and all this sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, it's sort of halfway between.
I was disappointed they didn't have the beer, like you said.
No, and I went down, I saw it was the taps, and I'm thinking, ooh, you'll be able to get a beer. And then when I circled back around, it was that Nitro coffee, and I'm thinking, oh, yeah. So,
really exciting.
Because then, to be fair, if someone like me goes in there and has two beers, I'm going to spend the whole time talking to all the Alexas just to get noise.
That's when you said you stood collected instead of correct.
Sorry, yes. Yeah, I noticed you're all over me there. But, and I was whispering, too, because I was A.
Well, so that person came up to you, right?
Yeah.
The staffer. Did they know you were, could they tell you were recording something?
Oh, no, I had my secret microphone pinned on the inside of my collar.
Okay.
So,
I just wondered whether they, like the way they, I mean, obviously it's an innocent enough question, but because we knew what you were doing, it almost sounded like it would have been like, can I help you? You're doing something weird kind of thing. Let me check.
Well, talking of weird, so 2 days later, I got an email from Amazon telling me about some latest book releases. Now, obviously, I am an Amazon Prime member, but I'm thinking, ooh, was I like facially recognized when I walked in? I didn't buy anything, but I was in the store. Well, but
if the Amazon
app. Did my phone give off a signal?
Well, it doesn't have to give off a signal. If the app is authorized to share your location.
Right. There you go. Yeah.
It knows you went into
the next thing you know, they're emailing me about, hey, you're looking for some books?
You didn't comment on one of the more interesting things that I read online about it, which is pricing. Now, it's a little weird and it's not weird. On the one hand, bookstores don't normally have pricing. It's not like they have a little price hanging like at a grocery store. Because the prices are on the back of the books.
Yeah. I didn't look at pricing.
But nobody at Amazon pays. You know, like when you go to Amazon, the original thing was that it's discounted, right?
Yes.
So, did you know that anybody who's a Prime member, you pay the online Prime cost of the books?
Okay.
If you're not a Prime member, you pay the retail cost of that book.
Oh, okay.
So apparently there's, like, in the app, the Amazon app, you can scan the books and see what it'll actually cost you. Because, like, the back of the book will say $12.99.
They did have
They have, like, the things around that you can do the same thing.
They had all those readers out there, right, so I'm guessing.
You did it with your phone. Again, it's more evidence that, you know, they're driving people to their system, you know, like because you're going to have a book with $12.99, and if when you put it under the scanner and it says, oh, if you were a Prime member, it'll only be $6.99, you might go, I'll get my Prime membership right here.
Well, I want to make this comment now about, and it is sort of, and this is why it felt, and maybe it was me and I was just subconscious, I was in the Amazon store and I was recording, and so I felt like it was on assignment, but you go to a bookstore, you browse, you pick it up, you look at the price, you flip through the pages. I was in there, and obviously, yes, because I was in there for the first time. If I remember correctly, all the books were face out. And to your point, I think there was only one copy of everything. Yeah. So it suddenly became like, so if you go into one of those stores where you're buying either medication or something, you know, if you go into like a stationery store and you're buying a computer program, they have the box out, but you just sort of look at the box and then you take the card and go up to the front.
Right,
and
right,
yeah. This is what I'm saying. You don't browse. Do you know what I mean? So all of a sudden, it suddenly becomes a very different. It's a bookstore, but it was a different.
Yeah, a little bit different.
And the way that everything's looking at you, so you're not like hunting anything out. I just spent the whole time reading the cards. Like, oh, 4.5 stars. Exactly. And so it suddenly became different.
Counting on an impulse buy.
Well, yeah, but it was just this slightly a bit like an episode of The Twilight Zone where everything seemed the same, but it was different. Do you know what I mean?
Back from the Planet of the Apes and it was slightly
different. Yes, it didn't feel like a regular bookstore, but it was a bookstore.
Yeah.
So
you also mentioned the no DVD CDs. I think it's another example.
That was interesting to me.
CDs for sure. DVDs, they don't have as many rights, but they're those are purely digital creations now, and they are driving you. The last thing they want to do is put a CD there when they want you to really go into the whole ecosystem of
downloading
music and movies. Yeah. Now, movies is a little weird because they don't have all the movies, and I'm anywhere close to all the movies.
No, and your Amazon web. And Amazon. I mean, I still buy Blu-rays from Amazon.
Right.
So, but I just found it interesting there was no electronic section at all.
I was in a Barnes & Noble.
No, that's the wrong word. Yeah, I don't mean electronics in terms of hardware. Yeah. There was no software. There was no, like I said, there was no electronic entertainment anywhere.
Right. So the I was at a Barnes & Noble, and they still have that section. I was shocked they had that section in the back, because who the heck is buying a CD from Barnes & Noble?
People like me going in there looking for deals, man. Looking for deals.
It didn't, and it was not cheap. And, you know, they do have more, is LPs, right? Like, so people are buying LPs to collect them, and they had a bunch of those at Barnes & Noble, but they were like $25 for LPs, and I'm like, hold on a second here.
Well, and people are collecting them, but they're not actually collectibles. They're all re-releases.
Exactly, right.
So it's not like the real, it's not like finding, ooh, a 1973 press of the Rolling Stones. I've yet
to
run
into anybody who's actually like, you know, when you go to their house, they're playing their LPs or something like that. It's probably more of a concept. So, pretty interesting. Let's see, did I forget anything?
No, so there you go. Amazon bookstore coming to a town. Again, I just found, I find, I couldn't get over just the irony of it all. That they pushed the bookstore out of business, and for some reason they now want to get into the bookstore business.
Yeah, but like I said, I don't think it's the same business, right?
No, it's like a gateway. It's like a gateway drug, isn't it? It's
to get you hooked up. You know, notably, they didn't have what they're trying to do with the grocery stores, which is, you know,
can I backpedal for a moment? But in a strange way, I just use the phrase gateway drug to sort of get you into to buying stuff from Amazon. But in a strange way, that's actually not the case. It doesn't quite make sense to me. Because even I'm now, as a person, I only ever go to the bookstore if I'm A, with other people who are going, or B, I'm actually killing time and I can find a bookstore. But beyond that now, I just go to the internet and look for what I want. So
That's what I said before. But saying, they're not there for people who look for what they want. No, I know,
but there's still something all very counterintuitive about its existence. I can't quite get it. I'm like, they don't need to get into this.
That's why you're an old person.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I wonder what Dr. Stephen Hawking would think. There wasn't a lot of room to maneuver around in there, though, because it's not a big space. So there you go. Yeah. I'm sure he would not approve.
Mm-hmm.
Or he might approve. I don't know.
All right. So from there, sports corner.
Sports, yeah. Let's do it. Yeah.
From the... in a wide range of emotional attachment to it.
So first, today is St. Paddy's Day. This is, you have made, your team has made history.
Well, no, so we'll get to that.
Eventually. All right.
First thing on the brighter side. So I was down in South Florida this past weekend and went to see a Nationals spring training game. Had amazing tickets. They're playing the Cardinals, and the friend who has a coworker who lives down there got us these tickets. We were sitting behind,
Remind me to put the boot into the ringer shortly. The website, The Ringer.
All right. Okay. In a baseball park, there's the dugouts, and the dugouts are sort of set back into the seats, so the seats are right behind them. So we were closer to home plate than the dugout, and in like the second or third row.
So how big was the stadium?
Held 6,000 people, apparently.
So it's a nice little non-league.
And so the Nationals park, it's brand new.
Yeah.
And they share space with the Astros.
Okay.
So both teams play there, and they've got like a separate set of, like when you come in, they got a big W and a big A for the Astros.
Oh, cool.
And they, there's a set of practice fields, but the main stadium, they just alternate their games. And then they play themselves, each other a few times, I think. But the, we had these great seats, and we were on the Cardinals side of things, meaning the visiting team side.
Did I have an organ? Does the organ play?
No, you know, there was walk-up music, you know, like all the part players have walk-up music.
All right.
And I thought this, you know, like everybody's trying things out. Like, do they test out certain walk-up music? And they're like, oh, I like that song, or I don't like that song, and they decide what it is. But the...
hey, man, I thought I'd signed it. AC/DC is in my contract this year.
So this guy
come
in front
on.
Of us, like a bunch of people are coming up and getting selfies with him. And then a couple of kids come up and get the ball signed.
During the game?
During the sand. Oh. So we're like, who is this guy? Well, it turns out he was the president of the Cardinals.
Oh, cool.
And so, like, I mean, I didn't recognize him. And, you know, I think maybe he was a former player, but I don't think that was much of his history anyway. So he was popular with people. But so we had these great seats and, you know, so it wasn't much of a game. But it was also very hot. Like, you know, it was like this one. One day was in the mid 80s and there was no breeze at all.
No, no, so it's cool. Like, you can buy, you know, you can get a beer and a hot dog and all that.
Man, that's the other disappointment, right? None of that stuff was cheaper.
No,
like,
no,
you know, like, no. I mean, the ballparks got pretty
it's
high
professional
prices.
Sports, man. They're ripping you off. Come on.
I mean, I don't even know what the tickets cost because they were shared, but I was like, come on now. Like, you know, $8 for a beer is a little bit insulting at the minor league ballpark where people are just sort of half butting it, you know, trying to try and play a little bit, but not really wholehearted. Ton of old people, you know, because there's a lot of retirees and folks
who. Well, this is the season for them, isn't it? It's ideal.
It's in West Palm Beach specifically, but on the East Coast, but not quite on the
water. If I'm a senior citizen retiree, I might not be alive during the World Series. So I need to enjoy my baseball now.
I mean, they're local. I mean, like, I can see how it'd be kind of a fun thing to just, you know, see those games. And you get to see everybody up close. You know, you have a mixed bag. Like, we had some players who didn't even have their names on their jerseys. Some guy was playing shortstop for a while. His number was 90. The Nationals have, well, there's a player, minor leaguer. His name's Kiboom, K-I-B-O-O-M, which, first of all, is like a cool last name, Kiboom, right? Well, Kiboom came up and he had it on his jersey. He's pinch hitting, so he hadn't been in the field. And then a guy comes up after him who doesn't have a name on a jersey, but the scoreboard says Kiboom again. And I'm like, well, I must have made a mistake, right? Like, they just carried the name forward or something. No, it turns out they were brothers.
Oh.
One's like 27, the other one's like 21. And then after the two got a base, everybody in the crowd was lit, and somebody got out. We're like, oh, we need another Kiboom. You know, it would have been kind of cool to have a third Kiboom. But
I'm going to imagine their DNA was only 1 or 2%
they have luxury, different. You know, they have luxury suites, basically. Like, they're, you know, in, like, there's an upper – everything's, like, low, obviously. It's just have 6,000 seats. And then there's, like, a level just above that, and we saw, like, there was, like, fans and, like, tables you could have a food at, and we thought we could go up there thinking it was like the little outdoor bars, but you were not allowed up there.
It's a nice sort of thing knowing it to go down. I'm sure there are people who
So in fact, after this, like, some friends of mine were like, oh, you were down there, I'm going down there, when do you get the autographs, because they went for their kids to get autographs. I'm like, I don't know, I wasn't there for autographs, I just went to the game. So I don't know whether that's a pre-game thing or a post-game thing, but, you know, there's definitely some stretch where you have them
now. When you go back during the season, if any of these dudes that you saw end up on the team, they'll be like, isn't it?
Harper played, and the starting pitcher played, and Trey Turner. Like, there's, like, major
players. But what I'm saying is, it'd be cool it'd be nice if one of the no-names broke through.
You can sit there
with your buddies and go, yeah, I saw Kiboom's
brother. One of the Kibooms was there. Or I think it's Kiboom.
Kiboom, all right, whatever.
I like Kiboom better. So that was pretty fun. Less fun was last night's Virginia game, which I feel obligated to briefly.
Yeah, because you were talking them up the other
because
week.
Because I was speaking, and
I now want to say, because
they
you're
still,
a national,
they still are a 30-3 team,
and that's great.
Unfortunately, of those three was first ever 1-16 upset in the NCAAs, and we're not going to talk about the game at all.
No.
The only observation, it was obviously horrible, and now it's going to be a story forever. And, you know, like, every time something comes around, oh, the one time, you know. And Virginia had one of these losses in its history. I don't know if you know the Chaminade loss from 1982, when on their way back from a trip in Asia, they had Ralph Sampson, the great Ralph Sampson, one of the greatest college players of all time, three-time player of the year back when, you know, people stayed for the full 4 years. And on their way back, they stopped through Hawaii to play a game, and they lost to lowly Chaminade, you know.
But that's not the same as being in the tournament, though.
Well, that was the legendary loss that people would talk about. Yeah. Now we've got another one on the slate. So for 20 years, we really need is another 16-1 upset in the next couple of years, because then it will just become one of a couple.
Yes.
And then it won't be as big a deal. But
can I ask you this as a fan having to sit through it? Because, again, as the neutral, I remember watching, it was a very late game, and I was having this conversation at home that I missed the days of the 11:30 game. Remember when they used to put on that really late game on a Thursday? But you're like, yeah, I'm watching one game between two teams, and it's 1 in the morning. Well, now they've replaced that by just having the games that seem to last forever, and you can watch them all in their entirety depending what channel.
Well, now you can watch different channels, right?
This one didn't start until nearly 10 o'clock.
No, it's like 9:30.
Ooh, okay, so 9:30. It was in Detroit, Michigan, and I remember making the comment during the second half.
No, it was in Charlotte.
Oh, no, this one was, sorry. Then they switched to another game that was only at halftime. That was in Detroit, Michigan, and I'm thinking, no wonder the seats are empty. Who's rolling back in downtown Michigan?
Listen, the Virginia game was the K-State and Creighton game, and that was like, I remember looking on TV at 7 in the evening, and that was empty. Like, I think, just like every sport event, there's a few people going, but you were making a point.
So I was making the point. I watched the game, and I was flipping through the games, and I kept looking for games I thought would be close. And even though that game was close at halftime, Again, we are conditioned because a 16 seed has never beaten a one. I'm sitting there thinking, well, it's close now, but I ain't going to be close. So I consciously actually didn't switch into it until the second half. And then it wasn't close, but of course it was a 16 right. running away with it. And I stayed with it because I was very aware that I was watching something of sport, you know, that's going to go down in sporting history. I do need to ask you as a fan, are you still in that stage where you don't care? All you know is your team has been embarrassed. Will there ever come a moment where you go, you know, I actually sat and watched history? Because I guarantee there are a whole lot of people across the country who didn't tune in to watch much of that game because they thought it was going to be a blowout. I mean, it's history. That was sporting history.
I don't care.
You don't care?
No. But
can I put a boot into the website, The Ringer?
Sure.
The website, The Ringer, and again, I'm now going to tie your two team experiences together.
Okay.
When the NCAA draw was, when the brackets were released, The Ringer has published a lot of articles this week about how this was UVA's time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were like three or four, and they were all talking them up and UVA's time. And obviously, after the upset, they've had those articles you cannot find on the website. There's a whole, it's been replaced by a whole load of articles analyzing how it lost. I want to let you, the Washington National fans, know. The Ringer also ran an article this week saying that this is either the Washington Nationals' time, but that time could be. Oh, no. Yeah. So if there's such thing as the Ringer curse, then you, my friend, are going to be the subject of it.
Yeah. Listen, I don't know anything about that. But the thing I wanted to make an observation about, and it's going to take us into our next sports topic, is that I could have a conversation with another person who's a Virginia fan or people who follow basketball closely enough and objectively enough about the game. And like, just not, I don't mean about like literally the plays, but rather what's going on here with this team.
Yeah.
But the problem is like, I'm going to have to deal with a bunch of people who are like, oh, what happened? You know, come Monday when I'm back in work. And if I was actually to tell them what happened or what I think happened, they don't
understand.
They don't care enough to like spend the time on it. Like when you have a team that whether it loses or it does, like, and you've got your own things and your own
fandom is a very interesting relationship.
People
that you have with
can
it.
Talk yeah. about like my yeah. the people that know me best have not sent me any emails or messages or things like that. I did get an email.
I specifically did not text you last night because I knew I had empathy for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Now to be fair, every time they showed someone in the stadium crying or someone looking depressed, I'm laughing away like, yeah, there you go, you're suffering. But I get to say that because I'm a fan of teams and I've suffered.
Right, which is going to dovetail into, but
if you are the casual spectator, you don't get to gloat because you don't have this. I can gloat on your failure because I know that in my sporting fandom, I'm going to have failures where you or someone else would have the right to gloat.
Yeah. If you did your NCAA picks and that's the only time you do it and you happen to pick Virginia to win it all because, a lot of people did have.
Then you're the sort of person going, hey, like, what happened, man?
Don't possibly come to me and have a conversation. And
what happened?
I shouldn't say that I even like begrudge you doing that. It's that.
No, but you don't have the right to.
You
don't have the right to. Non-fans don't have the right to put the boot into fans.
Well,
you don't.
There's no interest in having the discussion because you don't really want to hear why. You want to hear something that says.
You don't want to hear why and you cannot comprehend why.
Right.
You just can't. You're not. It's like Dr. Stephen Hawking talking to Trump. They're not on the same level.
So. And of course, we had this whole discussion about the Nats last year with their World Series collapse.
Yeah.
And so it is once again a case.
Well, you actually, can I remind you? You went to watch the Foo Fighters instead.
Exactly. Yeah, that was a better choice, apparently. So
but you know something, as a fan, you have that right.
Yeah.
As a non-fan with the decision of whether to go to the Nats or the Foo Fighters, that's wasted on a non-fan.
Yeah.
But for you, the angst of having to make a game five or Foo Fighters
decision. Well, I wasn't
going
to go to the game, but watch it versus go to the
Foo Fighters.
So, like, if it had been a choice of going to the games, I might have gone to the game.
I am trying to outline your rights as a fan.
This is two teams that have a connection to a team of yours, which is they are winners that are losers.
Yes.
Like, in other words, they're doing very well, and yet there is just this thing. And you were asking me beforehand, like, You weren't literally asking me, but you're just saying, like, this is that rhetorical question. Would you rather have loved and lost, so to speak? You know, like, to
would
be
you rather,
there
would you rather have gone? Would you
or
rather
never
have,
be there in the first
well,
place?
Well, okay, so I'm also a Georgetown basketball fan. Georgetown basketball is one of my teams.
Those are just losers right now.
Well, yeah, and we're not in the tournament at all. But sitting there last night, and having been a Georgetown fan as a 2 and a 3 seed and having been sent home at the first weekend, I'm sitting there thinking, ooh, at this moment in time, I'm glad that we were a 500 ball club and are not in the NCAA tournament, because I'm not one of the dudes that, because again, we tend to support teams. You know, all these people, the trouble with the under, no, not the trouble. With everyone last night is cheering for UMBC. Right? Because they want to see the upset.
And people love Golden Retrievers.
And they love Golden Retrievers. But the problem with it is they're not actually fans of UMBC. They're fans of a moment.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're a fan of the team that's going down, you're a fan of that team. Yeah. So it's too conflicting.
No, there's some people that are fans of that team. But, you know. But so...
So my question to you was, would you rather have not been in the tournament at all? And your answer was, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at that point.
Because if one of my choices is not making
it. Except, I mean, if that meant like the team was, you know, 10 and 20 this year, that'd be like, I'd rather at least be known for having been ranked number one. Now, I would have much preferred have to gone in there as a 3 seed.
Oh, I
three
don't
seed
know
and
about
lose
that.
Than going in a 1 seed and lose.
Oh, no. I'd rather if
no,
my option.
No, come on now. Like, you get to, they were ACC regular season, ACC. I wouldn't trade those things. I wouldn't trade the fact that, like, the whole rest of the year for like, just a horrible season. I wouldn't want a horrible season in replace of this.
No, that's true. But would you rather have just been mediocre this year and avoided being now the punchline for at least another year or longer?
That's a tougher call. I would have much rather have been a 7 seed or something.
All right, like fair that. Enough. All right. There.
But we didn't even get to pointing out that this ties into your Arsenal fandom.
Sure, yeah.
Which, of course, Arsenal, well, I'll let you describe better, but my take on it is, okay, and the general popular take still, is, okay. here's a team that comes in the used to come in the top four, now doesn't come in the top four each year, which means entirely the Champions League, but wouldn't, other than since the one season a little while ago, wouldn't win at all.
We have been one of the great names in English football historically. We are one of the great names. I put us down. We're not the Dallas Cowboys, but we are the New York Giants or the Chicago Bears, and that we are a great team with a storied history that have had some successes over the last 20 years as English soccer has boomed across the world. We have been very, very successful. We also have a manager, a head coach.
Well, but I mean, just so people don't know, like, what's different from the Bears is they continue to be quite successful. Like, they're up
no,
there.
But no, what I meant was, like, the no, Bears but, in terms of we are an established historical franchise
that
has had success over many decades.
It's not like Arsenal has fallen on hard
times. No. That's why I use the Giants a little bit more, because they won the Super Bowl only 5 or 6 years ago. Yeah. So, but what I mean is, what we're not is the Carolina Panthers or the Tennessee Titans. We're ultimately, you know, we are a name that sort of crosses into the general interest of the sport. We currently have a head coach or a manager who has been there for... 22, 23 years now. And,
French,
you know...
French fella.
Arsene Wenger. Now, I know here in American sports, especially, and it's interesting how we're talking, we've just got done talking about UVA basketball. Head coaches in basketball and football, the successful ones, they have been at their Dukes and North Carolinas and Alabamas, in some cases, for a couple of decades. In professional sports, that is not the case. Sure. The hire and firing curve is so much shorter in professional sports. So right now, we have a manager who's been there for over 2 decades. He is an outlier by a long, long way, not just in English soccer, but in soccer across the world.
Mm-hmm.
People don't last that long. You know, the people at Real Madrid, one of the most famous names in all of soccer, they're changing every 2 years. So anyway.
Arsene Wenger, for people who don't know his
name. Yeah, his name is Arsene.
It'll matter.
His name is Arsene Wenger, and we've got to the stage now, because the team is sliding into mediocrity, that as a fan base, we are locked in civil war with ourselves. There are some people, mainly younger fans who don't know any better, who don't want him to go, because they can't remember life without him.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got old hands like me of indeterminate middle age who remember, I've lived through like 9 Arsenal managers.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I like some of them, but they all got fired in the end. I'm at the stage that, hey, let's get rid of this guy, because you know something? There'll be another guy. Let's go. It's time to get him out. So
if
currently,
if you want to burn some time on the internet, go look up Arsenal Fan TV. And these people, like, they're on the cutting edge of, like, sort of, it's just like YouTube videos.
It's YouTube videos. But don't like go when they win. Only go when Arsenal lose.
And just go yelling and screaming.
And if you're a fan of human behavior, go and watch. If you're a sports fan, you're heavily into your team, go and watch. But go and watch people when they lose, because they do reflect all of us when our teams lose. There is this very honest sort of angst and disappointment, you know, 15 minutes after the game is finished, where people are just in stream of consciousness, like, this is the worst.
I think they're filtered because the people are willing to appear on camera. Like, there's a whole bunch of people like us who, when we lose, we're like, and you just walk away.
Yeah.
You know, like, you wouldn't appear on camera. But there's a segment that, like, wants to talk.
Yes.
And they go on
and
camera.
And they give you value for money. Anyway, so the last 6 or 7 years, as we've slid into mediocrity, the large percentage of the fan base that want him gone, we have a phrase. It's Wenger out. It's that simple.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can, and now in the age of Twitter, you can just hashtag Wenger out, and it is a hashtag of its own. You can wander around England and you can just say Wenger out, and people know where you're coming from. I've got a friend of mine who supports Leeds United, which is a once great English team that has now fallen on very hard times. He will email me every 6 weeks and go, what's going on with your man there? Mm-hmm. And I'll just tweet, I'll just email him back, Wenger out, and that's it. It is a shorthand term for get rid of this guy. It is two words that completely encapsulate so much more about being a fan. So I have noticed over the last, what would you say, 6 or 7?
Yeah, so like people would put a sign up in the stadium.
That
would
say Wenger out.
You'd sneak it in there and probably...
Wenger out. And then the stewards would have you put it down. Yeah. And then if you watch Arsenal Fan TV or you have any sort of things after the game, there'll be people yelling it or people holding signs that say Wenger out.
Yeah.
This Wenger out thing now, I have noticed, and you've been sending me stuff about the last 3 months. People writing signs that just say Wenger out now seems to have surpassed... just being a fan of one particular sports team in North London, where I'm from,
right.
We're going to post some pictures on the blog. People have been showing up at Trump rallies.
Yeah, like, anti-Trump
rallies. Oh, just political rallies.
The first one I sent it to you was like the 1 year anniversary where all the women were wearing the pink hats and stuff.
Yes.
And like there it is right on CNN. This will put this picture up. It's like in the middle of this rally. It's like the shot is perfectly framing it. Is somebody holding up a sign saying Wenger out?
Yes.
You know, obviously that's part
of it. Any type of political thing, someone's thrown up a sign that says Wenger out. Now, again, this is now transcending. This is not soccer. This is a political rally.
There's a number of British rallies. Like some of the pictures I sent you are for various protests in Britain, which obviously that's a little bit more likely to show up, but the American ones are a bit weirder.
The leader of the opposition, Jeremy Corbyn, was given a speech at some rally.
Yeah.
Someone behind him had thrown up a sign that just said Wenger out.
Yeah.
Now, that's probably a bit more closer to home because he lives in that area and he supports Arsenal. You could
kind of – but like when it started throwing
– But you sent me one of – I don't know if anyone watches the Today Show.
Right.
Any of those morning shows where they're all outside and interviewing guests and everything. You sent me a picture from the Today Show one morning where someone had shown up and you have all these people wanting to get on camera to say, yeah, we're the Johnson family from Nebraska or the
– Somebody's like, go Villanova.
Yeah.
And they even give you out signs because the little placards, they have a Today Show logo at the top.
Yes.
And so they just must have a bunch of people. Paper there, and they say, oh, go ahead, fill it out and put your sign up in the background.
Someone's put a sign up that says Wenger out.
Of course.
Now, again, if you don't know what we're talking about, then we're actually who we're talking to.
Right.
Because we now have this weird thing that has now seeped into mainstream culture.
It's appearing at a lot of WWE, you know, world wrestling like events. Like it just, and that, I mean, the wrestling events always have funny signs anyway. And somebody must have been like, oh, I'm just going to put the Wenger out sign up.
Yeah. And I just find it interesting. And I'm trying to think of other things over the years. Remember at football games, someone who used to put that John 3:16?
Right.
Well, that just seemed to be a thing where people would put it up at games. Wenger out has become that now. Like it's appearing at the most random. I'm sure if you watch American Idol or The Voice or something this week and they pan the audience, someone would be holding up a placard and said Wenger out. It's just, and so for me personally, it's kind of interesting. I have a team now that's getting close to irrelevant, and yet something that I'm passionate about is at the center of all things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like I was saying, like, you can't be offended by, like, it'd be one thing if they said Arsenal sucks or something like that. Like, yeah. Because that would be like, well, wait a minute, come on, that's my team.
Yeah.
But instead, it's just it's a sentiment with which you agree, probably. But even if you didn't agree, you'd just be like, well, that's just kind of funny.
But here's the thing now.
And you're keeping, like, listen, what do they say? No publicity is bad publicity. You know, so.
You and I are talking about this phenomenon that we've been seeing it at all these different things, and people, and it just keeps popping up in, like, you know, camera shots and stuff like that. But clearly now, because again, Arsenal are not the most famous club in Britain. Manchester United are. Mm-hmm. And Manchester United, I mean, to be fair, I can sit here and start naming names like Barcelona and Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, who are all bigger teams, probably with more worldwide fan bases. Mm-hmm. And yet, strangely enough, this Wenger out thing has become to the extent that people are taking signs and just whipping them out at things, knowing. I don't even know if these people are Arsenal fans or not. I suspect that some of them aren't. They just know that if I stick it up, it's going to gain traction now in this weird way that hashtags do. It's a very odd thing.
I'm pretty sure, you know, like the big sign thing at the college game day, you know, when they go to the different schools.
Yeah, and people always hope. I guarantee if you go back
and watch. A lot of signs are goofs anyway.
I'm trying to think. College game day, the show on ESPN is like 3 hours. I'm sure if you went back and watched 30 hours of college game day from the last season and watched every camera shot, you might well have found a Wenger out sign in there on multiple occasions. But again, I now challenge you out there, if you're at home and you're sitting there and you see that at something and you don't know what it means. That's what it means, and all of a sudden now you are now in on this.
You may, you know, you always thing. Have like a feature picture on our blog entry for that. It might have to be a thing.
I might need to change it for a while. Yeah, and just
I meant for this episode.
Oh, I will. It's going to be one of the Wenger out. Oh, it's going to be. I'm going to post a couple of these things. I was going to be the Wenger out sign. So yeah, and in a strange way now, obviously I want him to be fired.
Yeah,
because I need a new manager because we need to be getting better. But at that moment, there is a part of me. And I want to draw it back to what we're talking about you know, UVA. Last night, for 2 hours, UVA was at the center of the sporting world. Right? For the wrong reasons, but you were there. Right now, there's no reason to watch my team, but everyone is talking about it because of this Wenger out thing.
Yeah, that's
my When favorite. I finally get my way and Wenger is out.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to make up the first Save Wenger sign.
Yeah, well, beyond Save Wenger, we're going to have a new manager and life's going to go on. And then at that moment, I'm suddenly going to realize no one cares about my team anymore, even in a passing way. Yeah, yeah. So again, my question to you was, would you rather have not been in it at all than to have lost? But hey, you know something? Last night, no one was talking about Georgetown basketball. Mm-hmm. UVA was the center of the sporting world. Yeah,
much more
negative. In fact, maybe we need to have a sign that just says, I can hold up, and it just says UVA out. Because they are out.
Yeah. So, great. They'll help recruiting.
So anyway, we'll put some pictures up, and you can, and if you want to get in on this game of spotting Wenger out signs, watch any kind of TV coverage of like live events. I guarantee you're going to see someone holding it up. But again, he might actually get canned at the end of the season. Yeah, so, you know, you've only got a couple of months to get on board. Although, Wenger out.
Yep.
I think that's it, right? For the show. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at atlanticvoice.net. Email us at atlanticvoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.